Islamic Productions presents Focus on Islam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Focus on Islam. My name is Abdulaziz Ahmed Junejo, and I'll be your host this evening as we focus on Islam. This program, Focus on Islam, is designed to promote a better understanding of Islam and Muslims. And God willing, I hope we are fulfilling our commitment to you, the viewer. Tonight we have part two of a very interesting show we started last week, talking about Islam and democracy. This week, we will take case studies as the recent developments in Africa and the Middle East are ongoing. We need to take a closer look at democracy in the Middle East and Africa. Tonight joining me, my special guest, is Ibrahim Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Ibrahim.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Brother Ibrahim, how old is the democratic experience in the Muslim countries?
Well, we left off last week when we were talking about that the region in general, particularly the Middle East region, was actually carved out and divided by Britain around the turn of the century. And since that time, all Middle Eastern countries, with no exception almost except for Saudi Arabia, were colonized, directly colonized. And it wasn't until about in the 60s that one by one they started gaining their independence, late 50s and 60s. So at best, and that is not to say that the minute they gained their independence, they became democratic countries. As a matter of fact, it's quite the contrary. The colonizing forces, as they pull out of these countries, they made sure that they left behind systems entrenched that did their own work, so they don't have to spend the time and the energy and the money administering these regions and these countries. No, we will just have puppet governments there, and they will do our work for us. So the region then went from direct colonization to oppressive regimes, local regimes, tyrant regimes, yes. Often military regimes.
Yes.
And it wasn't until extremely, very recently, that we saw people in these countries starting to want to take over. They became fed up with governments and systems and so on, and they said, we're going to take things in our own hands. We saw that, for example, we saw it in Iran.
Yes.
When people were fed up by the oppression and so on of the Shah, and they took things in their own hands. We saw it in Sudan. We saw it in Algeria. We are seeing it now in Turkey, and it's just spreading throughout. The people are saying, this is not a representative government of our aspirations and what we want to do. And we are sick and tired of being kicked and beaten and oppressed and tortured by our own governments in the name of democracy sometimes, in the name of Islam some other times, and so on. So then it is only very recently, few years as a matter of fact, that some of these countries, not all of them, but some of these countries are starting to take things in their own hands and starting to implement some of these processes that we're talking about.
Well, we have sort of a contradiction in policies, and maybe we can talk about a case and study Algeria, which you mentioned. Why is the West so unwilling to embrace Muslim Islamic democracy being done in Algeria and willing to support a suppressive dictator?
Well, the United States has supported oppressive dictators before.
Yes.
The United States, for example, as I have just mentioned, supported the Shah of Iran for years and years and years. And the Shah, we also supported Somoza of Nicaragua. We supported the Philippines. We supported Marcos of the Philippines. And we continue to support oppressive regimes because, again, our norm of democracy in this country is local, is nationalistic. In Algeria, we are not necessarily saying that the United States should support an Islamic democracy per se. We are saying that the United States, in the process of exporting democracy, should stick to the same rules and should not change the rules of the game when we go from one system to another, or from one government to another, from one people to another. In Algeria, Just a very brief history. Algeria again was colonized by France in 1830, gained its independence in 1962, that is 132 years later. From 1962 until very recently, several hands have changed in Algeria, have taken over. Often, they were all some form of socialistic governments, and all of them were oppressive governments.
Okay.
Until late in 1988, when some process started to happen in Algeria. Actually, there was some form of bubbling that is starting to happen in Algeria. You have to realize that, again, that over the 130 some odd years in Algeria of French colonization, the Algerian mentality, the French were trying to strip these people of everything that is theirs. Language, tradition, culture, religion, you name it.
Yes.
So it is a very lengthy and hard and tedious process for Algerians today to restore their own identity and culture and so on. And it's taken very, very hard work. When you couple that with regimes that are oppressive, that makes the restructuring process even that much harder. So in 1990, there were some municipality elections. So after all of that, it took 1988 to 1990 of people saying, this is wrong. We want to have a hand in the process of electing our people, choosing our leaders, and so on. 1990, the middle of the year, as a matter of fact, there were some municipality elections in Algeria. And the Islamic Party, one of the many parties in Algeria, some leftist parties, some to the right, some to the left, and so on. And one of those parties, sanctioned by the government, was the Islamic Salvation Front in Algeria. Well, the Islamic Salvation Front swept the municipal elections. They got overall, they received 82%, almost a little more than 82% of the votes. That is an overwhelming majority that we have not even seen it in the United States or elsewhere. The only time that such a majority existed in those countries were in direct dub elections that are always 99.99%. The 99.99%, we see it in Syria, we see it in Egypt, we see it in everywhere, and most recently, we saw it in Tunisia. In Tunisia, Ben Ali now changed things around a little bit, and just to make it look a little more realistic, he won by 99.91 instead of 0.99. So it is a little more realistic. So 82%, with the ruling party, the party that is governing Algeria, received about 15% of the votes. National elections were set for a year later, for 1991. But in the interim, what the government did was they legislated a new law. That new law is to change the distribution of seats. And what they did is that they inflated the areas where they received their votes, and they deflated the areas where the Islamic Party received its votes. So they changed the demographics, they changed all of the rules of the game so that they, even with 15% of the votes, they would look like they have the majority. They have more seats. The Islamic Salvation Front objected to that and said, we're not going to participate in any elections until these things are resolved. As a result of that, the government jailed 15,000 people in the Islamic Salvation Front, namely all of its leadership was jailed, detained with no due process also. So there were no trials, no this, no that. 15,000 people were jailed, all the leadership in all municipalities. So there was no direction, no leadership for that party in Algeria altogether. And then they said, well, now we'll have elections. Believing and feeling that now for sure, without any guidance, without any leadership, now the government will have the upper hand and they will win the elections. And even that didn't happen. So ultimately then, the military stepped in. The army stepped in, and they outlawed the party, the Islamic Salvation Front. They jailed more of its members. And we saw from 1992, the elections were supposed to happen. In 1992, January, they were called off. The military stepped in, and it's a military government. So that's a chronology, of a very brief and crude chronology of what happened in Algeria. Now the question is, what was the role of the West that was watching all of this happen?
Yes.
And that was supposedly want to make sure that democracy is there to protect the democratic process.
Yes.
And to make sure that so long as the process is correct, I mean, it may not in our real best interest that so-and-so is in government, but if we protect the process, and if what we have is best, then ultimately and eventually we will be there, or somebody who believes in what we believe in will come there. Yes. Well, that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, the France, of course, whose eye is always on Algeria, immediately also backed the military move. The United States backed the military move, and the West in general backed this move that was in direct violation of the very principle of democracy.
Yes.
How can you back a system that says, I'm going to outlaw elections because it looked to me that I'm not going to win it? This is what it's all about. The government in Algeria knew that it is not going to win the elections. And because it was not going to win the elections, what do? Well, we outlaw elections altogether. And what does the parent of democracy, what does the West do? The West that preaches democracy all the time? Well, they say, it's fine. Not only is it fine for you to ban elections, but we're going to back you up. We're going to make sure that the other side of the story gets all the negative publicity, and we're going to make sure that there is no support for it, and. And most recently, just to wrap up that discussion, most recently, now in the Congress, a special committee on that region has now said that we want to see peace in Algeria. We want to see peace talks in Algeria, and we want to see peace prevail in Algeria. There is only one kink in that thought. That twist in that thought and that resolution is, we want to see peace and peace talks in Algeria, provided that the Islamic Salvation Front, or actually what they would say, the fundamentalists, are not part of it. What happened to democracy, and what happened to the voice of the minority, and what happened to all of that? Well, what we see is continuously a double standard process, a process where we preach one thing in this country, and then we practice something else. And we, again, this is the most blatant example is what happened in Algeria. But that's by no means is the only example that happened that illustrates this idea of double standard.
Selective democracy.
Selective democracy. We see it, we saw it as I said, we saw it in Iran.
Yes.
In 1979 and from that time on until now. We don't like the people who won the elections, so we're going to boycott. We're going to just claim that this is not democracy at all. So democracy is what works for us,
yes.
Then, in other words, not what's best for the people.
Well, another case in study is what's going on in Turkey today. And you were talking before the program about the recent elections there. Maybe you can tell us what's going on today in Turkey.
That's an extremely interesting process also to keep an eye on. Turkey was the center, actually, of the Muslim empire,
yes.
The Muslim rule altogether, until 1917 or so.
Yes.
And around the turn of the century, around that time, Turkey was ruled by Kemal Atatürk. And Kemal Atatürk is a pure secular leader in Turkey, who made sure that Turkey had no Islamic identity in it at all. He wanted a Turkish identity, not an Islamic identity. And in his thought, they were mutually exclusive. You cannot be this and that at the same time, which is an absurd idea of its own.
course.
But he succeeded in making Turkey a Turkish society with very little trace of Islam in its institutions, not its people. You cannot strip people from their beliefs.
Yes.
But he made sure that institutions were stripped of that identity, that Muslim identity.
Well, Turkey has a unique location also, correct?
Yes, it is. Turkey is strategically located.
Yes.
Turkey is an ally of the United States.
Yes.
Turkey is in a place where it's a bridge between Europe and the Middle East and so on. And exactly. It has its own uniqueness. It has its own value. Now, recently, the people of Turkey are starting to elect a party, an Islamic party in Turkey. And the most recent victory that Islamic party has seen is the election of the mayor of Istanbul, the largest city in Turkey. Okay. And suddenly a lot of flags are now going up. I mean, this is a democratic process. We didn't see any flags go up when the presidential elections were going on and whoever wins. No flags ever go up until we don't like the person who is elected, man or woman. And when they saw this party now is getting more and more support from the people in Turkey, and that people are voicing their opinion, go into the polls and say, this is the party that I would like to see in ruling, in government. Now they are saying that this is a second Algeria. They are now saying that, watch out, here come the fundamentalists. You remember a while ago when it was the Russians are coming? Well, now it seems that the Muslims are coming. The funny thing is that we in this country ought to realize that it turned out when the Russians did come, it turned out that we are getting along with them just fine. That the people who were trying to put in our minds, in everybody's mind at that time, the Russians are coming, meaning watch out, be on the lookout, there come your enemy, and so on. We're basically trying to manipulate our own feelings and thoughts and so on, and to bias us against a group of people that we know nothing about. The same thing is happening today. The media is trying to tell you, watch out, the Muslims are coming, the fundamentalists are coming, and so on. And my advice to you is to make sure that you don't fall in the same trap of the Russians are coming. And this time, what I would like you to do is to make sure that you yourself get to know and learn about these Muslims, these fundamentalists, if you will. These people whom you are told are coming, learn a little bit about them so you know how to meet them. So you know either to defend yourself, or maybe you're going to end up meeting with open hearts and open arms, because you will learn that they are coming not with swords, not with guns, not with battleships and planes and so on. Maybe they are coming bearing gifts to you. Maybe they are coming actually with the best gift of all, the gift of sharing with you a principle, an idea, an ideology that would help us maybe overcome our problems, that would help us overcome our homelessness in this country, that will help us overcome our moral dilemma, moral crisis that this country is going through. Maybe these people will just have some of the solution that we are looking for so desperately in this country. But the media is telling us the Muslims are coming in a tone, in a connotation that means they are coming to get you. They are coming to kill you. And what is really happening in reality is that we are going over to Muslims with arms. Every time we go over to Muslims, we go with arms. We go with planes to bombard them. We go with tanks to kill them. It is the other way around. So what we need to do is to get out of this mentality of war altogether and think and know that when the media starts to raise these flags, as a matter of fact, we ought to be smart enough. Every time the media starts to throw these flags around to us, that there is something there that I should investigate on my own. I'm not going to take the media's word for it. I'm going to investigate it on my own. And I advise you, the audience of this program, to keep an eye on Turkey. Keep an eye on what's going on there, because it is the policies of our government here abroad that has made people so sick and tired of our system of government. They see double, again, as I said, what they see is double standard.
Yes.
What they see is hypocrisy in what we say and what we do. What they see is they pat us on the back on one end and they shoot us on the other end. They see all of that, and then they realize, why should I? People there have been ruled in the third world, as we call it, by the way. They have experienced and lived through socialism. They have experienced and lived through even communism.
Yes.
They have certainly experienced and lived through capitalism. They have experienced all of these forms of government, and they have all consistently and continuously failed.
Yes.
And all that they are saying now is, well, we have something that's worked before, time ago.
Yes.
All we want is the chance to try it in a healthy environment. We just want to try it. Let's see, like all the other systems have had their chance, let's try it out. And if the majority of the people in that particular country or land wants to be ruled by this form of government, who are we in this country or anywhere else to go there and tell them, no, you do not know what's best for you. Here's how you're going to be governed. Here's the form of government that you're going to have and that's going to work for you. Whether you know it or not, whether you want it or not, here's the democracy you're going to have. And we've done that in several countries, and consistently it backfires. Because what we end up doing, we end up backing up and supporting oppressive regimes and sending a message to those people in those countries that we really don't care about you. And we preach human rights on one end, but we go and support oppressive tyrant regimes.
Yes.
And people cannot reconcile the two. And they are having a very difficult time reconciling what the United States preaches and the foreign policies of the United States are. And they find, again, they find that these two are very far apart. Look at, for instance, also, look at Bosnia.
Sure. Yes.
President Clinton was elected. One of his promises during the election was that he is going to rearm or lift the ban on the Bosnians so that they can buy arms so that they can defend themselves.
A principle and we cherish in this country so much.
Yes, exactly. Do you know what he called? He called Bush's policy an immoral policy, not just wrong policy,
yes,
his Bosnian policy, but in his campaign rhetoric, Clinton called Bush's policy an immoral policy. He called his policy towards the Haitians, turning Haitians back, he called it an immoral policy, not wrong, not just wrong, an immoral policy. Look at what he's doing. Clinton is doing identically what Bush was doing. He called an immoral policy. Clinton, up to now, has yet to lift the ban on the Bosnians.
Yes.
He has yet, for instance, to implement any different policy regarding the Haitians. They are sent back still. So his policy is an immoral policy, just like Bush's was. There is a problem of theory and practice.
Yes.
And that's what we are looking at today. Look at, this is a second example. A third example is what has happened in the Sudan. In the Sudan, the majority of the people in the Sudan, this very poor country, the majority of the people in the Sudan, again, having been ruled by British and by this and by that, finally said, listen, we want to have this form of government rule us democratically. This is what we want. What have we done to support and to enhance a democratic process? What we've done is that we have suffocated economically and politically. We suffocated the Sudan. When people say we want Islamic rules to rule us, that's what works best for them. They are not saying we want to rule you with Islamic rules. They are saying we want to be ruled according to our own faith. Who are we here in this country to say, no, you can't live under your own set of rules and set of faiths and set of beliefs. No, you're going to live under a set of rules that we have devised for you. Whether these set of rules are alien to you, totally foreign and you cannot relate to them, they mean nothing to you, you will still live under those set of rules. People then wonder, we wonder in this country, people in this society wonder when they go abroad, why is it that Americans are so disliked when they go to the Middle East, when they go to Europe, when they go elsewhere? And we need to stop and really think hard. Why is it that people in this country, when they travel abroad, are disliked? Knowing that people in this country are the innocent victim of the foreign policies of the different systems and different government. The reason is we have always tried, we have always shoved our own policies and ideas and thoughts down the throat of other people without those other people saying, yes, we would like these policies.
Well, Brother Ibrahim, I think you've given us some good examples and case studies. And I appreciate your advice to our audience. We need to seek out who are the Muslims, what is it all about, and also to look at history. What was the golden era for Muslims was the golden era for all of civilization.
Yes.
And we are the friends of the people of the book, Christian and Jews, not the enemy of these people. So I hope you've given us a good advice that we will take it upon ourselves to search it out. Jazakallah khair.
Thank you.
And thank you, the viewing audience. This program is for you, and without you would not be possible. If you have questions, if you have suggestions, if you would like information on Islam, please write. Please join us next week when we focus on Islam. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be with you.
Everything, Allah is one. He is the only one. La ilaha illallah. Allah is one. He is the only one who created everything. Allah is one. He is the only one. La ilaha illallah. Can you see the moon? Can you see the sun? Can you see the shining stars? Allah made them all. Can you see the night? Can you see the day? Can you see the clouds high? Allah made them all. They glorify and praise Allah, and they always obey Allah. Malaika, they are the angels of Allah. They glorify and praise Allah, and they always obey Allah. Very powerful, the angels.